From the BBC World Service, this is the World Football Podcast.
Welcome to this special edition of World Football with me, Delith Lloyd, where we're going to be chatting all things Ange Postecoglou, particularly his early coaching history and whether he's left a legacy in those countries. Ange started his coaching career in his native Australia before moving on to Japan, a route not well travelled, and it's been a very impressive start for him at Tottenham Hotspur. Our football reporter Manny Jasmi joins us. Manny, we'll chat about Australia shortly, but please explain to our audience why the J-League is such a difficult league to coach in.
Hello, Delith. Yeah, it's because it's so competitive. Even in a decade when Sanfrecce Hiroshima have dominated, winning more titles than anyone else in that decade, they've still had five different champions in the last 9 years. And this season ended this weekend. Vissel Kobe won the league, and that was their first time. And so you don't really see that range of variety in many leagues. And that's because it's so competitive and very even. And that's why it's so difficult to work in as a coach.
And Postecoglou, he was appointed Yokohama F. Marino's coach in 2018. And this is where he really made a name for himself.
Well, yes, you could say that, although he'd won the Asian Cup before then and was very successful as a coach in Australia. But, this was a step up in club football, and he joined in a difficult season when they were battling relegation. But the following year, he won the league, and he did it with a brand of football that a lot of people who watched the Premier League now know very well. His assistant during that time was Peter Chklimovsky, and I've been speaking to him about the impact of Ange Postecoglou in Japan.
The impact was a massive one from Yokohama F. Marinos' perspective. It was a difficult season in terms of result, but the football that we built was very different to what has been seen in Japan before. The kicker to that is the following season, we turned into champion mode and won the trophy with the style of play that obviously the world now knows as Ange Ball. That has obviously left an impact on Yokohama F. Marinos. It's also left an impact across the country, because when we came here, there wasn't many teams that were kind of willing to play, let's say, possession-based football. There will probably be a handful of clubs that were that way inclined. And the impact of the 2018-2019 season, I think, has changed Japanese football, where a lot of teams want to have the ball and play an aggressive style of football with the ball. And in the test of time, I think it'll be an Ange effect, where it's a massive impact that he's left on this country.
I interviewed Ange in 2018, and he spoke about his frustrations that his brand of football was appreciated but not really understood or embraced in Australia. Did he find a home in Japan?
Yeah, in some ways he did. I think he found a respect for what he does. And he's, I've said this for nearly 20 years now, that I've always believed him to be one of the best managers in the world. And that was a long time ago, 2004, I started, my journey with Ange. And with the Australian game, I think there was a sense of frustration of no real significant progress that, let's say, Ange dreamed for and was working toward, and that probably still sits with him. Japanese football appreciated Ange what felt like a lot more than what home did in Australia.
You had to deal with a new culture, a new language, and quite often one speaks to an Anglophone coach who goes somewhere, especially East Asia or Southeast Asia, where the culture is so different and the social expectations are different, and it takes them a while to get used to it. Did you have that problem?
I think the kind of people we are, it was, we're very respectful, honest, hardworking, natured people. And we've gone all over the world with our football. So in that sense, cultural shifts are easily adjustable. And I think what probably defined us most was how we had to adjust to communicate. I think that gave us a real edge in clarifying our message and coaching language to a group of men that had a few different languages. That really sharpened our craft, how to get the message across, both from a football's perspective and a mentality perspective.
That's interesting. How did you do that? Because the brand of football that Ange likes to play is quite complex and quite intense, and I imagine needs a lot of explanation, and if you don't speak the local language, that's probably quite hard. So how did you two do that?
Mate, to be honest, football's one language, right? So, and the skill of anyone is how can you simplify your message to get the point across as clear as possible, as succinct as possible. 2018, we started our journey at Marinos, and I think by 2019, three transfer windows later, there'd be around 25 outs and some significant signings that came in and really lifted the mentality in the environment to where we created a real edge in our environment, just chasing to be at our best every day. And that was the ingredients to progress from where we started in 2018 to ultimately becoming champions, which was the first time in 15 years that the club lifted that trophy.
What did that championship mean to you both?
Yeah, it was a special achievement for everyone involved. Those are the moments that you work in football for, to create those special moments with people around you and the supporter base. Really significant moment for us as, you know, sort of Australian coaches, because that was, if I'm not mistaken, the first trophy that an Australian won abroad, and definitely in a major competition like J League. So, yes, significant moment, special moment that we hold close to our hearts, and a real reward for a real super piece of work, if I don't mind saying so myself.
Absolutely. You won the league after all. Ange had a fantastic start with Spurs this season, better than anyone expected, but he's lost three in a row now, lost a few players, but he has stuck to his principles quite rigidly, some would say. Others would say he's, you know, emphatically loyal to those principles. How do you think he's going to deal with this this time at the moment where, you know, there's a lot going against him, and for the first time he's been criticised. His players are dropping like flies all over the place, and he's lost three in a row.
Football can dish up anything at any time, and it's definitely done that recently to Ange. And there's only one way he'll go about his business, and he'll keep building the football. He'll stick to his beliefs and principles of the game, the values of the game, and he'll keep pushing his environment and his football club to be at its best, no matter who's playing and who's available and who's not. He'll keep going straight ahead and chase the best football possible. He'll try and be as aggressive as possible. He'll try and play the most entertaining football as possible. And I think he's already said that he loves this part of the journey and the project, where it's a little bit of doubt, there's a little bit of uncertainty. And that's what I've learned with Ange, that, you know, greatness doesn't come without it. And it's how you stick through these tough moments and keep growing from these tough moments that'll end up turning into part of the story that achieves success.
Some Spurs fans and pundits were a little bit jittery that he doesn't change anything to suit the situation that he's in. But I suppose that's the Ange you know, isn't it?
That's all I know of Ange, mate. His plan B is get plan A better. And no doubt he'll do that. And within that, you know, it's well documented how successful Ange has been in his career over a long period of time. And that would be nearly over 20 years of coaching now. So he'll get through these tough periods, and I'm convinced he'll bring success to Spurs.
In Europe, his honesty has charmed a lot of people, whether they support his clubs or not. What's the most honest piece of advice he ever gave you?
I've been blessed to be alongside him for, you know, it was spanning over a 15-year period. So to narrow down the advice to one statement would be unfair, but Superman, super character, super leader, super manager. And if I can say anything, it's probably we're always chasing to be at our best every day and push the environment to do that. And one of the things that he'll always say to everybody is be yourself. And that's what I'll take with me, but also that's what you see with Ange every day in the media and no doubt at Spurs training ground.
Peter Chklamowski, the former assistant coach with Ange Postecoglou for many years.
Yeah, really interesting listening to Peter there, Manny. I know you followed Postecoglou's career, haven't you, as well, for many years. Just tell us, when was the first time that you came across him?
Well, it was when he was the coach of Brisbane Roar, and he played a style of football that hadn't been seen in Australia before. They just went through the A-League like a hot knife through butter. They won back-to-back league titles, were unbeaten for 36 games. And that was really the platform from which he ended up as the Australia coach, took them to the 2014 World Cup, won the Asian Cup in 2015. I didn't think actually that they were the best team in the tournament, but he blended star experience like Mark Milligan and Tim Cahill with really low profile players into a team that became continental champions. Mm. And then from there, he went to Yokohama.
Well, you mentioned Mark Milligan as well. I've been speaking to the former Australia captain who played under Postecoglou for both club and country. Mark is the current assistant coach at Adelaide United, who are currently third in the A-League. And it's Mark's third season as a coach. He's part of the staff overseeing one of the youngest sides in the league. In fact, their last match squad included six teenagers. We'll chat to Mark about the impact of Postecoglou on his coaching career and Australian football. But first, I started by asking him about winning the Asian Cup under Ange in 2015.
It's a strange one, actually, because I felt like there was actually more pressure before the tournament, because the lead up to that tournament, we were at best very average. So the lead up wasn't great in terms of results and, look, probably indifferent performances as well, I think, which you're probably coming to understand when it comes to Ange performances and the way you go about things is pretty much just as important as a result. But there was a moment before the Asian Cup, it would have been probably, I think it was in November leading into it, and we played in the UAE and then we played in Qatar. We drew with the UAE, very difficult conditions, didn't play our best, and then we went and played against Qatar and then we lost 1-0, and Ange that game had left me on the bench, and unfortunately I had to sit on the plane next to him on the way home as well. But I remember after that game sitting in the room afterwards, and basically he said to us, like, I don't know what everyone's issue is, because in a month's time we'll be lifting the Asian Cup. And that really felt like lifted the pressure, really. I think the expectation that we had on ourselves internally was nothing compared to what anyone externally could put on us, which in a weird way, I think, really relaxed us leading into a tournament.
That's quite a belief to have as well, isn't it? For him to sort of stand up and go, we're going to win this thing. I suppose that just gives an indication of his mentality, but also his belief in the players. I presume he had the whole room at that point, did he? Everyone was behind him and with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, after you sort of come off, you know, maybe not two of the not greatest performances, I think for him to stand in front of all us and I guess reassure us that the journey that we were heading along, you know, was going to lead us to where we wanted to get, which at the end of the tournament was Mile Jedinak lifting a trophy. And the timing of it, I think, was just as powerful. But that, again, you know, that was the Ange that I'd known for a long time. And he knew, you know, where we'd been, what we'd done, and where we're going to be in another 2 months' time.
Where does he rank in terms of the coaches and the managers that you've had then? How influential has he been?
Yeah, look, he's definitely been the most influential coach that I've had in football. I think, you know, we've had probably, I'd say, an indifferent relationship over the years. Obviously, it started with me quite young with the under-20s national team. You know, I was a little bit of a hothead when I was younger, and you know, we didn't have run-ins, but he told me some hard truths when I was young, and, you know, that helped me. And then obviously when he brought me back to Melbourne Victory, I hadn't had any contact with him for a few years in terms of actual, you know, footballing contact. So his success at Brisbane Roar was very much what brought me home from Japan. You know, I wanted to be a part of that. And look, that was probably another big shock to the system for me. And this was really where my attitude towards football and the way the game was played changed, because I expected to come in and we were going to play very much a possession-based game. We were going to dominate teams with the ball. We were going to wear them down. And then, you know, as his Brisbane team did. And it definitely wasn't the case when he came to Melbourne Victory. We played a very high tempo, aggressive, you know, on the front foot type of game, which I really took to. I really felt like that was a missing piece in the puzzle for me as a player. He's very team orientated. There's not really that personal touch unless you're sort of on the field. If there's information during sessions and things that you need to receive, then that is the case. But, you know, I've never known Ange to sort of be the one to come and put an arm around around me. He's more been, for me, you know, the sort of tell it like it is all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Do any of your current players now that you coach ever ask you about him and what he was like as a manager as well?
Yeah, quite a bit. And, you know, obviously with a young group as well, they like to hear those sort of yarns about, especially Ange was in Australia. And, you know, there's certain situations I'll ask where, you know, there was actually one the other day where I had to have a chat to a few of the young boys, just normal things. And I remember one came up to me a couple of hours later and asked, you know, is that how Ange would have handled it? I said, probably not, mate. So you should be happy that it was me standing here.
Yeah, he's spoken about his sort of unconventional route, I suppose, through to the higher echelons of football and obviously finding himself in the Premier League, you know, in his late 50s for the first time. And it's fascinating, isn't it, how different managers sort of peak at different ages. But do you look at the likes of him and think that this could be me and that the goal for me will hopefully be the Premier League one day?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think he's done that for a lot of Australian coaches. You know, I think, you know, historically, as players, Australian players as well, I know for myself, when I was young, it was extremely difficult for me to get into the UK and ultimately led me to playing in Asia. His journey, you know, is definitely one that has, I guess, really given, I guess, hope. I don't want to say hope. I think it's more a goal, you know, a faith that that we are good enough, that we see football in a way that can compete, you know, worldwide. And I think we've known that for a long time, but him being able to really forge this path for everybody else is so, so important. And look, don't get me wrong, you know, we might never see another Australian coach in the Premier League, but what it has done is give us all something to aspire to.
Without doubt. And I know you're very busy, as you say, with Adelaide, but I'm sure you've been keeping your eye across the pond with how he has been doing at Tottenham. What have you made of the start he's had at Spurs?
Look, I'll be honest, he's probably working me harder now than he was when I ever played for him, because I'm getting up at all sorts of hours to watch, obviously, him and Mille on the staff as well. So, look, it's really, I know a lot of people have said this, but it's not a big surprise. I've been really enjoyed, I think, ever since, you know, he's left the national team, watching his teams play, and I guess how he's evolved as a coach as well. And, you know, the little things, the little changes that you see, you know, as his journey progresses as well. And I think that's no different, I guess, for me now watching Tottenham. I think the way that he has them playing, and I can definitely understand, I guess, what direction they're heading in. And I think the way that the players have taken to it is amazing. And I saw an interview with him probably a week or two ago, and he was talking about the difference from, you know, Australia to Japan to Scotland and now into the Premier League, and obviously the caliber of player that he's dealing with now is you know, elite level. And I think just to see how quickly they've taken on board what he wants. And I think, you know, traditionally I know his teams to really peak after a year, and you're not always given that luxury, especially at the top level. But so it's just good to see them really buying in and believing in what he's doing, because I know the end result will be very satisfying.
That's the former Australia captain, Mark Milligan. And thank you to our very own Manny Jasmie. Well, that's it from the latest World Football. There will be plenty more from us coming up over the next couple of weeks as we gear up to the Africa Cup of Nations. Thanks for listening.